This is the Land and Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Whitetail Properties Real Estate. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye. This is your weekly resource for habitat management, wildlife management, and recreational real estate. We hope you guys enjoy the show. Welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. We got a good one coming at you this week. We're talking all things land. That's right, land real estate, land investments, and what all that means for those out there who are seasoned in this, but also new and trying to get in the game. So excited to bring this podcast to you. But before we do, let's be sure to jump in and talk about consulting 2023. If you guys are interested, please send us an email. Schedule is filling up very quickly. We want to make sure we can get to everybody and be as efficient as possible. So send us an email, info@landandlegacy.tv, or go to the website, click on consulting tab, and fill out that information and question inquiry there. We've got myself, Adam, Kyle, Frank, and Brady who are looking to come and visit each and every one of you, and we're looking forward to what next year brings. Also, quick note, be sure, if you have not yet subscribed or become a member of OnX, you need to. Go check out their elite platform for landowners. It is the best tool, best mapping tool, and management tool for your property when it comes to organizing information, the layout, the features of a property. We're using it daily, and you want to be able to keep up to date and stay organized on all the projects you got going on, all the planning that goes along with owning land. Use OnX, and specifically use a code LEGACY20 to get a 20% off discount code for that membership. All right, guys, without further ado, let's hear from Mr. Neil Hogger of Whitetail Properties. He's a seasoned land specialist with the company, and we're chatting about land ownership, what it means to be a landowner, the investment, the monetary, the finance side of things. A lot of people don't like to talk about money, but we have an open, real conversation about that, and I think that's necessary, and hopefully will provide some people a path to land ownership as well, what that's going to look like for them in their scenario, and how we need to manage expectations when it comes to land. Everyone has a dream property, but how do you reach and get to that dream property? It may not be your first purchase. It most likely is not your first purchase, but we talk about that path to land ownership, and I think it'll be a great conversation. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in and talk with Mr. Neil. Alrighty, guys. On the line with me, I've got Neil Hogger of Whitetail Properties. How are you doing today, sir?
Hi, Matt. Doing good, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Excited for you to be on and chat about just land. But before we dive in deep into our conversation, give us a little bit of background of who Neil is, what area you serve within the Whitetail Properties footprint, and kind of how long you've been in the real estate game, but also land game. Sure. Let's chat about that.
Well, first off, thanks for having me on. I've been looking for this, been a big fan of you guys for a long time. I'm a regular listener of your podcast, so kudos to you. My name again, Neil Hogger, and I'm a land specialist with Whitetail Properties Real Estate, and I operate out of Western Wisconsin. So I have, if you look at the map of Wisconsin, I'm covering counties of Polk, St. Croix, Pierce, Pepin, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Dunn counties. And they're kind of the river counties and arguably some of the best counties in the state and even in the United States. So I'm very blessed to be here. I came to Whitetail Properties after about a 25-year career in the medical device industry, the pharmaceuticals, tube of medical devices, and I kind of semi-retired at age 51 when my company was sold, and I'd been an investor in land and residential properties for since about 1997, And I was a big fan of Whitetail Properties and the television show. And like most guys, I probably lived a little bit vicariously through some of those guys because I didn't get to hunt as much as I'd like. And when I knew I was looking at a career change, I called up Dan Perez on the phone one day and we got chatting. And it's a not a real long story, but there's a story. And then he offered me a job. So
wow,
I just completely changed careers at about 51 and started this.
Nice, nice. That's a unique story in and of itself, I'm sure. But obviously something that you're in sales and you have a passion for land, right? So just, hey, why not just try and pursue something of passion and go for it?
Yep, I would agree. And, you know, I get a lot of calls from guys that want to come and work for Whitetail Properties or just like to get in the industry any way they can, but would like to work for Whitetail. And they're like, what does it take to, you know, get in here and work for you guys? Because I love hunting and I hunt all the time. And here's some pictures of deer I killed. And, you know, they kind of go down that path. And after I let them talk about it a little bit, I say, you know, honestly, that's not really, I don't think it's really the model that they're looking for. Of course, right. Passion and integrity and honesty, that's all part of who we are. But Whitetail seems to find a different level of person. Yep. I mean, they look for business owners, connected people that have like infinite amount of connections and maybe have run a business and have really good business acumen. Because that translates to our clients when we deal with a multi-million dollar property and a guy that is, you know, his net worth is quite substantial.
Yep.
They want to know that the guy that they're dealing with is not just an average guy that just decided to get a real estate license one day. And so it's quite different. I don't know if I put my finger on how you get into this team exactly, but yeah. I don't know. I got lucky. They saw something to me. They were a week. It was a weekday for Dan. He didn't have any prospects, I guess.
Well, that's cool. So how long have you been there with Whitetail?
I am coming around the last quarter turn to 9 years.
9 years.
And I've been doing it full time. And I think I was too ignorant early on to realize that I probably shouldn't jump into this full time and just – you know, think I was going to do well. Yeah. But I did. And I kind of say that a little facetiously, but it's kind of true. I don't think I knew what I didn't know back then.
Yep.
And so I just went out and put my skills to use and did, you know, showed up every day, which, you know, it's a simple philosophy. Just show up every day and do the job and good things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. So what I really want to get into today, now that people know who you are, where you're working out of, your experiences and background, I really want to talk about, the benefits of owning land and what that does. Let's just say outside of, a recreational potential, right? Everyone wants to own land. That's a huge driver for the audience that's listening. Many already own land, but there's a lot of other nuanced benefits and values that can be obtained by having your name on a deed. And I want to talk about that. And so you're a great fit for this conversation. So why do you suggest, Neil, that folks become landowners? What's the value here?
I tell you what, I could go a million directions with this, but I'm going to take you down a path that I don't know if anybody's ever said. And that when I bought my first piece of land, I felt closer. And I remember walking out onto my first property that I ever purchased and literally just standing in awe. My wife was with me. We were newly married and I was standing in the timber and I was just kind of like looking at it, kind of like I was a little bit in awe of the creation of everything about it. And I was touching a tree and just kind of standing there. My wife was letting me have my moment, I think. But then finally, after like a long time of just kind of standing there and like looking up there and listening to the trees and just kind of soaking it all in. Cause gosh, I just bought this. I own this, you know. She looks at me and she says, "Holy cow, will you just hug a tree? It looks like you're going to cry or something." And it kind of like broke the ice. And yeah. I went, "I know." I go, "I'm just telling you, I can't tell you like this connection that I have." Mm-hmm. So when you own a piece of property, it's different than when you are using a piece of property or you're on public land because it's yours. I mean, yeah. I walk through my woods and my fields, and I this sounds a little hokey, but I truly do this. I sit down and I soak it up. Every blade of grass is talking to me, and I hear the wind and it caresses my face, and the smell of that earthy fall soil leaves smell, and people that hunt understand that. And when you own something, you, I mean,
it's like
old farmers will tell you that.
Yeah,
it gets under your nails, it gets under your skin, and you bleed, and it, your blood's in the soil. And the old timers that own land, that's why it's so hard to get them off of it. Like, they will fight, die for the land. Mm-hmm. And they bury their dead in it. And then when it comes time to sell, like getting, even though they have millions of dollars of, you know, money tied in it, and they are dirt poor, could be a millionaire, they can't let themselves let that land go because it's in their soul. And so that level of owning land is way differently than the financial benefits, obviously.
Yep.
And those are things that I don't think a lot of people talk about, you know.
So, yeah. Oh, I think
that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of times people are purchasing land for like the ancillary benefits of like the resources, let's say deer, right, and the activities. The recreational potential. Let's just call it that. Let's just say the recreational potential is the driver. But once you become the owner of a said piece, there's a lot more value from that connection standpoint, from the ownership standpoint, from a responsibility, a stewardship perspective that really takes that recreational value, what was the initial driver, and kind of throws it into second place there. And because you just feel this overwhelming sense of, man, this is mine, like ownership, not necessarily like from a prideful standpoint, but like a responsibility standpoint, I feel like. And that stewardship, let's say driver that we all have in us that we don't know sometimes that's even there till you own a piece of ground, really just kicks into high gear. And that's a huge driver for people. And I think it takes a little bit of time. Maybe it could be, you know, the first time you walk out on a place, you're just taken back by the fall colors. But sometimes it can be, I've had landowners I work with, it's a year or two into the process of really transforming a property and having their hand on it, kind of leaving their mark with it, that drive really begins to kick in. And you don't buy that in a store. You don't go to Walmart and you find that on a shelf. And that's the kind of stuff that I think really drives people and moves people into this other element of enjoyment, happiness that they didn't know to expect. And that's what land is.
Yeah, us landowners, I mean, I'm sitting in my place right now, and I'm looking out, and I don't see any houses. I don't hear cars. I see nothing that's man-made other than what I'm sitting in.
Yep.
And when I come here, it's my little world. It's my little safety place. And my phone, it doesn't ring because I turn it off, and I get on my tractor, and I do work. Or, you know, my wife says, "What do you do up there all the time?" And I'm like, "I don't know." But yeah. I do a lot of it. And I, at the end of the day, I feel this super deep level of satisfaction. And every season brings a different level of beauty. Even the, you know, up here, it's cold in the winter.
Yeah.
But I love like putting on my snowshoes, getting in my Sitka gear and going out and, you know, trapping coyotes or what, mm-hmm. or even just going for a walk and see what tracks I can see. So yeah, like owning land, it touches you in places that a lot of people that don't know are there, and maybe even a city dweller have never experienced it, but they kind of think they understand because they're drawn to it themselves a little bit.
Well, and I don't want to jump ahead of the conversation necessarily, but because this aspect of life that we've all experienced here in the last couple of years really was a driver in a financial side of things from a land value standpoint. But to your point, people in the city, as soon as COVID was happening, they may not have ever owned land, ever desired to own a piece of land prior to, but here comes that magical gear we don't know that you have, and you say, I need to get out. I need to go and experience whatever this land is. I need the distance. I need the ability to go out and experience something that I haven't experienced yet, or I cannot experience and will not experience in this city, in this place. And wow, here we go. Here's a lot of landowners, new landowners, first-time landowners that have occurred in the last couple of years.
Yeah, you know, I had a call maybe a month ago from a guy who found me on my YouTube channel, and he was watching my videos, and he almost got a little tearful. I could hear in his voice, and he says, "I got to get out of here." Mm-hmm. I made it through. He lived in Minneapolis, so he made it through all the riots and burning, and
right.
He was deathly scared that was going to happen again. And but he's like, "I don't know how to do this. I don't come from the country. I don't know how to buy anything. I can't grow anything because I've never gardened, but I think I need to learn. And I got a limited amount of time to find something. And I've been watching you talk about how to do this." And he kept calling me sir and telling me that what a great service thing for people like him. And please keep talking about it and showing people, because he was trying to make a move and escape from the city. I don't know if he was liberal or conservative. It doesn't really matter, because I'm hearing that same sentiment from both sides.
Yeah.
They all want the same thing. Safety, some serenity, you know, get back to the earth, not feel so sterile all the time.
You don't know
it's a
how
huge
much.
Draw.
Yeah, you don't know how much you enjoy peace in your life and all aspects of life until you don't have it. And in that situation, right, there probably wasn't a lot of peace there that was happening. And so it's like, I just need to go find that. I'm like, I'm not finding it here.
I almost put my farm up for sale this spring. Actually, I did list it very shortly. And I think my wife maybe saw like a change in me a little bit, because I think she sensed it. And she said to me, "Honey, I don't know if you should really sell your property. Like, you know, people call me the Wisconsin landman. You're Neil Hauger, land specialist, you know, Wisconsin landman. I mean, what will you do if you don't have your land?" And I'm like, "I don't know." I mean, honestly, I've owned land since the early 2000s probably. And, you know, I go, "Yeah, I know." So I ended up taking it off the market, and I look back and I go, "Well, I could have made a lot of money on it for sure, but I don't know. Again, I'm sitting here. I need some downtime, man. This is my place away from everybody. And the only thing that'd make it better is shooting a buck today and having my buddies here to enjoy it with." But
sure. But that's what we're talking about, right? Is okay, this balance back and forth of enjoyment and that extra feeling that you get. And I'm not gonna say it's just an identity feeling, but it's something else. There's the deeper drive to be able to go back to a place and experience the land, experience the natural, the quiet. And we've done a lot of podcasts where a lot of people just, they may not know it, but they're going and they're hearing God speak to them just because it's quiet, and haven't yet attributed it to creation and being outside. But the ability for you know, someone to experience that is a huge driver. And for yourself, you're like, "Well, I could think about the financial gain of selling this right now in this moment in the market. By the end of the day, what am I, is that money going to replace the happiness of owning the farm and having that escape?" Well, ultimately, no, not for you in this scenario. So, right, land comes off the market. And that's just how big of a driver owning land is.
Yeah, you know, and for me, I mean, I do have those spiritual experiences when I'm here, but this type of investment what a lot of people don't understand is you can have both. You can have that spiritual connection to the land, and you can create real serious wealth for yourself. And it's the only asset class that you experience that you don't get that from commercial properties. Right. You don't get it from residential or multifamily. You don't get it from stocks. All of them, you all make money on, but you don't get that spiritual connection to your stock market. But you That's do right. get it to land. And so, you know, I don't want to kid anybody. I buy land as part of my portfolio because I do plan on making money with it.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Not necessarily the driving force, but it's a driving force.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. So let's kind of talk about that, because I know that that's what people are going to be expecting too in the conversation. You know, there's a lot of terms that come with owning land that a lot of people may be looking into that just don't understand maybe an expectation of like the term ROI, and return on investment, or another one of like what is my if you're going to compare it to a stock market growth, what are we expecting here year to year? But what is the true value of owning land? Because pre-show we talked about, hey, you know, a lot of people are talking about this being an investment, but what really is this? Can you kind of break some of that down for the listener?
Yeah. Well, so when people think about real estate, okay, let's start with that. It's a big term, and there's all types of real estate. There's, I just mentioned some residential, multifamily, commercial, there's land, and then land can be broken down into, you know, maybe waterfront property with residential on it, like a lake cabin, or it could be tillable ground with corn and soybeans, or it could be all timber for timber value and timber harvesting. Or what I deal with a lot is kind of like mixed use. It's got a little bit of tillable, it's a little recreational, but it's not a farm in the term of farming. Although I grow a little bit of corn, I'm not doing it as that's not my crop. That I'm growing deer and having fun on my property. And so when you look at land, how it fits in, and if you're going to start to think of from it in the terms of investing, you got to kind of like begin with the end in mind. I think you got to kind of fit, like, where do I jump into this big real estate market because of where I'm at personally in my own financial journey. And for me, land was not my first purchase. It was very early, but it wasn't my first. I did 401k, stocks, bonds, and then a residential home. Then I bought land, then I got a one rental, and then I bought land. So it's probably my fourth investment.
Yeah.
And there's reasons behind why some would do it that way versus others. The land, you know, like recreational property, like I'm sitting on, this isn't going to see that, or it may see that trend of slowly upward, you know, growth, you know, 1% a year, and then it might jump 3 or 4, 5 or 6% because of COVID, but then it'll flatten out a little bit and it'll kind of just kick along. It doesn't really change. And sometimes it could be decades where the average price per acre in Polk County, Wisconsin, stayed right around $1,450, $2,000 an acre. It didn't really change. So when you come and you buy this as a quote unquote investment, you have to ask yourself, is it really an investment? Because I'm not making any money on it unless it goes up. I'll talk about how you can make money in a second, and I'm actually spending money to keep it. So it's a liability. Is it an investment? Well, you know, not like in the normal terms in the sense of the word, because it's not making you money.
Right.
And are you gaining equity? Yeah, it's like a forced savings account. Every time you spend your $500 a month mortgage, you know, your equity just got $500 bigger. And then you gained a little bit yearly because of the percentage increase or two or whatever it is. And so that equity pool gets bigger and bigger. And then eventually someday it's paid off. And when you sell it, then it becomes a great investment.
Yep.
And you made a lot of money with it. But along the way, it wasn't – there might have been better investments that you probably should have done or could have done. So recreational land, guys, when you go out there and buy it, you know, you're not going to typically, unless something extraordinary happens like COVID, you're not going to typically make these huge jumps. Now you can force the equity on a piece of property. So that's what I did. I coupled the COVID effect with doing things. So I had all these fallow fields and I got food plots in them. And then I brought my Banks blinds up and I got tree stands trimmed out and I tricked out my house here and I forced equity up so that now if I went to sell this, I'll make money. But along the way, I'm spending a lot of money on this quote unquote investment.
You're making the improvements to the property driving that equity.
You're forcing the equity, but it's a liability the entire time you're doing it for the most part on this recreational land. But there's a big payoff at the end because my farm, I bought it for like $400. It's probably worth $650 to $7 2.5 years later. So you could argue with the money that I've been paying down, the equity that I've gained, the market influences. Yeah, I've got some wealth there, but I don't realize that wealth until I sell it.
That's right. Yep.
So then when you look at like another type of investment, like residential properties, residential, either your own personal home, but let's talk about multifamily or single family rentals, duplexes, fourplexes, quads, you know, whatever. Hopefully if you buy them right, are paying you money every month. There's positive cash flow, money in, money out. You got money in your pocket every single month. And, you know, on a good, you know, single family residential, I would typically say if you can get, you know, $3,600 a year positive cash flow on one house, you're probably doing really good. And you're renting it and you're dealing with the renters. And if you can get 10 of those, well, gosh, you got $36,000 a month or a year, you know, roughly coming back to you just in cash flow, not to mention the tax benefits and the equity gain that is also making you richer.
Yep.
And so, but along the way that's different, is now you're dealing with tenants and the $36,000 a year that you make, you have 10 times effort. And I would argue that with the forcing of the equity on my land, I've surpassed that, tremendously surpassed that, and enjoyed the land along the way, farming it, food plotting it, hunting it, just recreating on it. And I had none the pressures of having tenants.
For sure. Yep.
So it's a different kind of mentality. I actually do both. I have a brother-in-law that is way into residentials. He owns like over 100 doors. And we have this conversation all the time because I like to buy small properties and flip them. And I've done a couple in the last 16, 18 months where I've made six figures doing it total. And he's like, well, you know, is that sustainable? Is it scalable?
Sure.
Can you scale that? Like a house flipper that goes out and makes, you know, $5,000 to $30,000 on a flip. And I said, well, I made as much money on two flips of land by putting in food plots and trails and tree stands and cameras and cleaning it up a little bit. I made as much in 2 years as you would have to make doing 10 flips or five flips. I don't want to over-exaggerate. Five flips with a hell of a lot less stress.
Yeah.
I went out in the woods and sat on my tractor and mowed and trimmed trees and cleaned things up and, you know, did a little bit of work on a mobile home recently and sold it. But so when you look at, you know, land as an investment versus residential rentals, you make money on both of them at some point, hopefully, if you're doing it right. But they're completely different in the quality and the feel and the experience. I might be rambling here if that even makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. I think people are always wondering about that, right? Like, okay, how does that work? And a lot of times I will talk to people and, you know, say, hey, you're going to make money at the purchase, right? Like, you got to get it right when it comes to land. That's no different from a house situation if you're trying to do that. But if you're into that game, yeah, you're want to buy absolutely right to kind of protect yourself, protect your profits if you're in that game. But if you're in Talk a little bit more about the game of, hey, I'm just going to own this thing for my family, and we're going to enjoy this. I'm not going to be in the business of trying to turn and burn some small parcels, but I want to own this for 10 to 15 years, and maybe I start with an 80, and then I'll work up to 7 years down the road or so when I see a good spike in the market. I might list it and then bump up to a 160 and so on and so forth. That's a gradual, more long-term play, but a play that's reasonable for a lot of folks who are at the end of their lifetime. They're trying to own a decent-sized farm to be able to have an impact on their neighborhood, to be able to let some younger deer walk and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But really just to enjoy that aspect of hunting with family, having those opportunities and time outdoors. What does that look like from that that term investment over the course of, you know, a 15, 20-year period? So maybe they're building equity in each property, but essentially gaining more land as they go down this road too.
So I have this conversation quite frequently with younger, you know, 20 and 30 somethings that are trying to get in the market. And what I hear universally is, I can't find a piece of property in 80. I can't find it, number one. And number two, when I do find it, it's so gosh darn expensive, I can't afford it. And I say, okay, well, what if you looked at it a little bit differently? Instead of buying that 80, that you have to save up 20%. So like on, you know, $300,000 80, 20% is going to be, what's that, $6,000?
No. It's going to be 35,000, I think.
35, yeah. 10% would be 30 grand. 20% would be 60 grand.
Yep. Jeez.
My brain is still numb from being on a tree stand. How many guys in their 30s can afford, with their life and their kids and their wife and their cars and the breakdown of the dishwasher and, you know, blah, what, name all the things that come into and happen in life, who can afford to save up 20%?
Yeah.
That's what they want. They want 80 because they want to set down roots and they want to build a house and they want to have some chickens and they want to hunt and they want to have a little food plot area. What I would tell people is maybe set your sights a little lower, because you got to get yourself into the game, because you can't out-save the market. You can't, it'll outpace you every single time. And that's what people are seeing. So what I tell people is maybe you got to start smaller. You have to start with something you can afford. So instead of saving up 60 grand, can you save up 16?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 16 might get you into a 20-acre parcel.
Sure.
And it's not exactly what you want. It's not as big as you want, but I mean, maybe it's got some woods and it's not high quality timber, but you know, you can do a little hinge cutting and a little thinning out there and some hacking and squirting. You make it really thick and make it the best habitat for, you know, 3 miles around, and you can suck a deer or two in and you could shoot a nice buck. Is it your dream property? No, it's not. But you bought it at an affordable price that you could afford. And then you improved on it. You enjoyed it a little bit, but then you moved up. And you sold, you took that equity, and then you went to the next one. And by this time, maybe you get to a 30 or a 40, and you never thought you would own 20, and now you own 40 or 60 or whatever. And you're not to your 80 yet, but you do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your dream property. It's not perfect. It doesn't have the perfect access, and maybe only one side. You don't have two or three-sided access. And maybe you got a neighbor that's not, you know, he just is browning down. He likes to shoot deer, and he's not, there's not Pope and Young or Boone and Crockett around. But you got your second piece, and now you did it again. And you work your way up is the point. Until you get to that dream property, by the time you're 30, 40 years old, where you finally kind of know what you want in life, you know, life is stabilized a little bit. The kids are kind of in school, and, you know, college is taken care of. And then you finally put down your roots. What I see a lot of young people do is they want perfect right out of the gate. They want booners. I want it in this neighborhood. I don't want to drive more than 10 minutes from where I live. I have to have it right here. I want water, and I want a creek. And I, you know, they have this perfect YouTube, you know, video property that they've watched a million times, and that's the only thing they're going to buy.
Yeah.
They don't buy anything. And in the meantime, COVID happened and the land went from $1,400 an acre to $4,000 an acre, and they still don't own anything. And they come to me and I'm like, because you guys have to approach this. So on one hand, Matt, I would say this to people, there's nothing wrong. It's a great dream to find that piece of land that you're going to put down roots and you're never going to leave it ever again. That's a fine dream. It's not compatible with investing in land, buying, selling, increasing net worth, getting a larger, better piece, higher quality, better experience. That's a process. Mm-hmm. And I talk to a lot of people and they don't make that separation. I'm going to buy this. I'll never sell it. I go, well, then you didn't buy an investment. You right. bought a liability for the rest of your life.
That's right.
And they look at me and I'm like, well, it's not an investment because it's like you have an aversion to making money. Like there's something wrong with buying and selling these properties. Mm-hmm. But yet on the other hand, you're telling me you want to live in Buffalo County because there's booners everywhere down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You okay. That's fine. And if you could save up the money, then good for you. But you better be ready to spend $9,000 an acre, $8,000 an acre, $7,000 an acre and do the math on 100 acres. That could be 700,000 to 900,000. And you're going to need 20% down. So you're going to be pushing $200,000.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you have $200,000, right? Probably not. Mm-hmm. I don't. So, so you got to start smaller and work your way up.
No, I think
that's how you do it.
I think that is a great entry game into it. You just graduate over time, allow yourself to build that equity and build the experience too of owning land and understanding transactions and interest rates and how things work and the exchange of land and who your consumer base is for each, let's say, parcel of land that you have, whether it's a 20, then you get to a 40 and then a 60 or whatever the case may be. Like you learn so many things about land and who's interested in those pieces. I think it allows you to be a better and well-rounded, more open-minded landowner when you work from small to big. But yeah, I mean, would everyone like to be able to afford that several hundred acre type farm in their mid-20s? Absolutely. Sure, that's great. But unless you have a fantastic avenue to get there, this right here is going to afford you that opportunity over time. And I think that there's sometimes this odd like stereotype stipulation revolving around that buying and selling of land, like, oh, you shouldn't do that. You're just driving up the prices and whatnot. But like, hey, that's a way for you to build equity and build your experiences in doing that. And I don't think that there's anything necessarily wrong with that as a, let's say, business opportunity. If it at the end of the day, you're doing it right, you're treating people right, and you're building your footprint so that you could be a better, well-rounded landowner, more power to you.
Well, I'm going to address something you said there because it brought up a memory. I remember when I bought my first piece of property, I bought in this little town called Mellon, Wisconsin. It's in southern Ashland County, Wisconsin. So mm-hmm. if you go all the way to the northernmost county, Ashland touches Lake Superior. You drop to the bottom of that, a little town called Mellon. There was hardly anything there.
Yep.
And I bought there just a piece of land that was raw. And I forced my hand on this property by making trails. I brought in heavy bulldozers when I could afford it. I harvested some logs. I took the equity, $6,000 or $8,000 I got. I handed it right back to a guy with a bulldozer. He spent like 5 or 6 days out there clearing out food plots. And then I had a guy come along, and it really wasn't related to the food plots, but the same thing would have happened during COVID. I had an energy company come and buy that property. And I tripled my money when I did it. So mm-hmm. then I loved that property. I built a cabin in there and I have pictures of my little girls, playing in the sand in the foundation when we were making it. And there's a lot of great memories there. My hand is in the concrete with my girls. But I knew that it was a tool. Yes. This was a tool to get me to the next level wherever. But I always thought of it like a tool. And so I moved to the next level, and that's when I came here to Indian Creek. But in the process, my equity went up, my net worth increased, I got closer to home. I'm still an hour and 20 minutes from home, and a lot of guys are looking. I just talked to a guy, I want a property here. I said, where do you live? And he told me outside of Menominee. He goes, oh, I want something there. I'm like, okay, well, you know, that land around there is $5,000 an acre. Oh, I can't afford that. I'm like, okay, well, then you need to go over here to Douglas County. It's an hour or two away from you, but it's $1,200 an acre.
Yep. So
with your budget, you could buy 200 acres, but you got to drive 2 hours to get to it or an hour and a half.
Yep.
So sometimes I would say you've got to kind of expand your horizons a little bit to get what you can afford and sometimes get as much land as you want. But you have to give something. There's more wolves there than there are here. You know,
sure.
There's not as many deer there as there are here. You know, it's a 2 hour drive to get there. So there's those concerns and people, I think you really have to sit down. And like, when I talk to people, I sit down and say, what do you really want?
Uh-huh.
Like if your scope is so narrow, good. That's your scope of what you're looking for and stick to it. If that's what you want to do, but don't be upset when it takes you 4 or 5 years and the market is now up here and you still haven't bought anything because you're so narrow.
Yep.
I just think you have to look at it like a journey. It's a journey to get there. And you make a couple moves with land. You're not buying and trading like stocks. You could do that every day with a keystroke on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Land, you know, two or three jumps to get you. And you literally can be a land millionaire. I know guys that have done it. Equity-wise, they are a millionaire. In two or three moves, 4 moves, maybe, whatever it takes. But
right.
But you got to be okay with that. And some people, I don't know what it is. They're adverse to doing that. Although they want money because money buys them what they want, which is more land.
Exactly. There's multiple ways to go about this, but just like a lot of things in life or growing a business, a lot of times it's best to slow and steady wins that race and instead of just grow fast.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. And land is one of those where you can make good conscious decisions. You can, using your term, force the equity, make the improvements and build value, in land and, then realize that value and move on to the next piece. So I think then all the same time, be able to enjoy things from a spiritual level and a connection that you may not have known that you were going to have as well. That is the added benefit. And I don't think that you can really put a price tag on that. That is priceless. That is extreme value.
Agree.
And, you don't get that anywhere else but being outside in creation and doing what you did this morning, even though you said you didn't see a deer from the tree stand. You said, well, that's okay. I saw a barred owl or whatever. And this awesome encounter,
yeah.
Right? The fall breeze hitting on your face.
Beautiful morning, 8 to 10 mph breeze blowing my scent out over a swamp at a pinch point. Clouds came in. It was cool. It was one of those just hanging there in my saddle and looking at the world from 23 feet up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm sitting in my office looking outside a 4-acre food plot and I'm saying, wow, this is gorgeous. Look at the color here. You've already lost all your leaves up there, but I'm still enjoying the hickories and the oaks and they're just absolutely stunning. And we finally got some rain. So it's like, Just being able to experience those little things that just slow you down in life and just kind of provide perspective from the hustle and bustle of whatever it is, whether you're selling medical advice or you're consulting on other people's land, there's always work involved in things. But I think that just the opportunity to own land gives you that perspective and slows things down when you don't need it.
I do want to say that if my bosses, my broker, Dan or Jeff, if you're listening to this, fellas, I was closing a deal from the tree stand on two properties. So I was organizing some inspections and dealing with an appraisal today. So even though I'm up 23 feet and I try to put my phone away, it's, you got to do what you got to do, because there's people listening here that I got to help out. And that's,
you know, here's
what
thing.
I do. So
you can multitask. You know what? That's the good thing about cell reception and being able to email, right? You can multitask and still hunt and be out there. I'm going to do it all. I do it all the time.
I could just put it down, but you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. So anything else, Neil, that you want to leave people with regarding, let's say, the opportunity to own land and that term investment thrown around here before we jump off?
Well, the one thing I'm going to tell you, and I'm not trying to plug me, but I did make a video about this. I was sitting out in the swamp at my farm here, and I sat down and I lit a fire, and I had a little campfire in the middle of the winter. And I talked about five things that is like a general guide to help you make a decision on what would be a good investment, what could be a good investment. So I want to encourage people, a little shameless plug, but go find that video. It's the Fab Five. I talked about this on a couple podcasts, so I'm not going to bore people with details. But that is a general guide on how to decide if this is a good property, because a lot of people get analysis paralysis because they're just so afraid of buying something that's not perfect. And I tell them, every property, you're going to have something. The approach, the habitat, your neighbors, the soil, whatever. It's never, ever going to be perfect. Buy it, follow the Fab Five to decide if I checked most of these boxes, and that'll tell me this is a reasonable property. Hire a guy, maybe, and them, if you really have to, pay them a few bucks to get an opinion. But guys, just get started, get in the game, buy what you can afford, start the process, improve it. Just realize this is not your last property. It's the first in 3, 4, 5 until you get to that perfect piece of dirt. And if you know, bike riders say this all the time, wherever your head goes, your butt goes with you.
Yeah.
Right. So if your head's going that direction and that's your goal and you got a little bit of a plan, the rest of it will get clearer as you go, because birds of a feather flock together, right? All these little sayings that people say. But if you dive into this market, you'll start to get to know guys like Matt and I. We'll help you do it. We'll advise you along the way. And then 5 years from now, you'll be saying, man, I'm glad I did this. I'm glad I just took that first step and didn't overthink it. It turned out okay. Right. And worst case scenario, you're not going to lose anything. You can always sell it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You're not going to lose. Somebody's going to want to buy it from you.
Yep. Yep, for sure. So Neil, I know you've got a podcast. I've been honored to be a guest on that podcast actually kind of recently. So how can people learn more about you from not only the real estate side of things, but maybe start to listen to your podcast and follow you on YouTube?
Yeah, man, I appreciate the opportunity to tell you all this. Well, first and foremost, I would say just go to our website, whitetailproperties.com. We're just the greatest bunch of guys in the United States, and we want to help you guys buy a piece of land. I mean, flat out, we're going to help you buy it or sell it. So go to whitetailproperties.com, just click on the agents tab and type in Neil H or Neil Hogger, and you'll find me there. That's the first place. Second place, I do have a YouTube channel. It's called The American Landman. You could go to YouTube and search Neil Hogger Land Specialist. You'll find it. You go to Facebook, type Neil Hogger Land Specialist. You'll find me there. And I have a podcast, as you said. Thank you. It's kind of a new project, but it's called The American Landman, Buying, Managing, and Selling American Land. And we talk about this kind of stuff. And I try to bring in guys that have actually just experienced it, like bought property. And we talk about their process and what they learned and what they may have done differently. And just sometimes we talk about hunting and making food plots, but it's all about, it's really geared towards the financial, like wealth development aspect. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the main theme of it. But along the way, we like to talk hunting and food plotting and soil health and all that. So American Landman podcast, find it usually at your favorite podcast spots, Spotify, Google, and Apple.
Right on. Well, sir, thank you so much for your time. and talking about this. I know this is just it's a passion project for you, but something that you're knowledgeable on and just enjoy. And everyone listening too, right? This is something that you guys can get into. Owning land is not out of your own reach, and there's ways to do it. There's strategies to do it. In every case, it's a case by case basis, right? And I think for your podcast, you know, you review a lot of those scenarios that folks have utilized and put into practice to achieve their goals, or at least begin the journey of achieving that goal, which is important. Sometimes it just takes some time to do it. But sir, thank you for coming on, being a part of this podcast, and we'll do a quick little closing here. But Neil, appreciate your time.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
There's another good one wrapping up, going in the books for you guys. Appreciate you so much for listening. Just so consistently, guys, that is huge for us, and we appreciate it. So striving to continue to provide good quality content every single week, or twice a week, actually, all about private land ownership. So if you will, just continue to be up to speed on all that we've got going on. There's a lot of things happening behind the scenes I think you guys are going to really, really enjoy. So continue to follow along, share the podcasts that mean the most to you on social media, get that message out there, help us with that. There's a lot of good value that we can share in conversations like we had with Neil today, that we can have around land and what it means. This is not just a downloads kind of thing. We ask for you guys to share so that together we can build the community of land stewards, conservationists, of hunters, and landowners, and what that means to be a landowner and carry on a legacy. So thank you all so much for what you do, and thank you for listening. We will catch you guys here next week on the Land Legacy Podcast.